You are listening to the Teaching Little Brains podcast with Sarah Nicaruk, episode 51. Hello, Teacher Brain. This episode is dedicated to a friend and colleague of mine, Matt Coleman. Hey, Matt, who is responsible for the focus of this one. You see, both of our kids have gotten interested in podcasts recently, and in fact, Matt's son, Quinn, now hosts his own podcast called the Sprout and STEM Podcast, that my daughter has become so enthralled with that she listens to it on repeat to the point of memorization and then walks around reciting it as she plays with her toys. But it's been a refreshing break from the looped playing of the poop episode of the Brains On podcast that she had been listening to before that, which is a great podcast and an interesting episode, but poop 24/7. That podcast was also shared to us by Matt, whose son did the same thing. Like, what is it with poop? Oh, the poop. Over and over. For weeks on end. Anyway, that prompted Matt's question to me about repetition. What is it about repetition that kids love so much? What do they get out of it? I mean, they like to hear the same stories every night before bed. They like to eat the same foods for lunch. They like to play with the same toys and watch the same movies. So why are they so inclined to listen to the same thing over and over and do the same thing over and over and ask the same questions over and over? Why? 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 Are kids predispositioned to repetition somehow? I can't even tell you how many times in a row we've now read Diary of a Wimpy Kid or watched the movie Elephants on Disney Nature. Thank goodness at least she's drawn to, for the most part, good quality stuff. But so in inquiry-based learning, when we want to investigate something, we teach the kids that there are three main ways to gather evidence about something. So you can ask your brain and heart what you already know about the subject. Number two, you can ask an expert. And thirdly, you can research it. So in books, on the internet, by experimentation, watching some movies, etc. And it's best if you can do all three, of course. And while there's no right one to choose first, we always encourage the students to start by asking their own brain and heart to teach them to get like in touch with and trust their intuition, to train their brain to generate good questions. Remember, the quality of your life lies in the quality of your questions, and to engage in critical thinking. So I started asking myself some questions to see what my brain would come up with. Do I remember watching, listening to, and or doing things repeatedly? Well, only if you count watching, rewinding, yes, rewinding, and rewatching movies up to four times in a row in one sitting repetition, or listening to, rewinding, and re-listening to a song over and over. Actually, I used to record a whole side of a cassette tape with the same song so I wouldn't have to rewind it each time. And I can't even tell you how many jump shots, soccer shots, and how many hours I practiced the flip-up skateboard trick, like where you put the skateboard face down on your feet and then you jump and flip it up and land on it. So I guess the answer is yes, I did enjoy repetition. Why? Well, I watched the same movie over and over because I liked it. I liked the part I was watching. I liked knowing what was coming next. It was exciting to anticipate knowing how it ultimately turned out. I liked being able to say the lines along with the characters. For songs, I liked to learn the lyrics, obviously, so I could dramatically sing them to myself in the mirror. And I did the jump shots and skateboard tricks over and over to get better. Those were my initial thoughts, and I wondered if any of that rang true for Zoe. So I decided to jump to number three and ask an expert, Zoe herself. So here joining me today is the most special and important guest I will ever have the honor and pleasure of interviewing, Zoe Nicaruk. Hi, Zoe. Thank you for joining me today.
Thank you for having me.
Zoe, today we're talking about repetition, things we like to listen to or watch or do over and over again. And I know that you definitely have things that fit that description. Can you talk to us about why you like to listen to the same song or podcast episode or watch the same movie or play the same game and read the same books over and over again? What is it about the repetition that you enjoy?
So the thing that I mostly like about this song called Honey, I'm Good is that it's got really good music and it's really, really fun to listen to.
So is that why you like to listen to it over and over?
Yes.
What about the podcast episodes that you listen to? What makes you like to listen to it over and over again?
Well, they're really fun and they're funny and they're cute and I think they're really, really fun. I like this podcast called Cool Facts About Animals, and if you have this podcast, please download it.
Okay. And what about the movies that you like to watch, like Elephant on Disney Nature?
First, I'll tell you what Disney Nature is, guys. So Disney Nature is these real-life animals that they make movies of.
And what makes you want to watch it more than one time?
Because it's super good and it's very, very interesting. There's real-life animals in there, of course. Because it's called Disney Nature.
That's right. And what other things do you do over and over again?
Well, I like to do Code Spark. It's a game. And I really, 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 really enjoy it because you have to create your own stores. It has lots of activities. And somebody shared this program called Pigsy's Pesky Problem. And what in a few 3 or 2 weeks, there's another one, and it's super fun.
Okay, so you like to do it again because it's fun?
Yes.
And you want to have that fun feeling again?
Yes. The reason I actually watch it again is because my brain, when it sees something, it wants to do it over and over again because it's fun. So like when I was at SpartaCon with Ada and I did the 5.5 and I made it to the top and it was really fun and I did it again.
Yeah, you went climbing, rock climbing, and you made it all the way to the top.
Yep.
And then did you just stop and walk away?
No.
Oh, what made you want to do that again?
Because it was really fun and really, really brave activity.
So you wanted to have that feeling again?
Yeah.
Okay, so then when you're at school and you told me you have to do math and language over and over, is that fun?
Well, sometimes.
So why do you think you need to do it over and over again?
Because it's a school activity that you have to learn everything new every day.
Why do you think repeating things helps our brain learn stuff?
Oh, because you can do that thing again, but this time try something different. Like when I was doing the stamp game and plus, and I moved up to take away, and then it moved up to times, and it moved up to division and stuff like that.
So when you practice it again and again, you get better?
Yeah.
And then you can have taken a new challenge?
Mm-hmm.
Well, thank you so much for being here, Zoe. It was very nice to chat with you.
It was very nice to see you.
Thanks for telling us all about repetition.
And thank you for having me. Bye.
Okay, so I'd gathered some evidence. I've thought in my brain, in my own heart, myself, and I've talked to an expert. So then I did some reading and research. What I found out was super interesting. As it turns out, an early developing preference for the familiar is actually quite common in infancy and early childhood. These preferences begin to develop before a baby is even born, in the third trimester of pregnancy. At that point, fetuses can taste, smell, and hear. So they even begin to develop preferences for familiar flavors from their mother's food in the amniotic fluid that floats around them. They also develop preferences for familiar sounds, like the sound of a mother's voice or their native language, and even familiar stories that are read to them from outside the womb. And I remember when I was pregnant, I was teaching grade one, and every morning, of course, we stood for the national anthem, and I'd sing along with the kids. And I remember one day thinking, I wonder if Zoe will recognize O Canada when she's born. Now, I don't know how scientifically accurate this is, but one day when she was fussy at like a couple of weeks old, I remembered that thought that I had had in my classroom, and I started singing O Canada to her to see what would happen. And she calmed right down, and she stopped flailing for a second, and she looked as though she was like processing something in her little mind. I wonder. Anyway, after they're born, and only after like a few hours of exposure, newborns develop a fast preference for their mother's face. And soon after, they develop preferences for faces in general, all based on familiarity. So repeatedly seeing the same faces and hearing the same voices. And this preference for familiar might be adaptive, creating an early affinity for the people that are most likely to take care of them and are around them most often. And as a side note, this is also where racial bias can begin to develop as well. And speaking of babies, I remember when my friend had her baby, and she was one of my first close friends to have a baby, and I was around him a lot. And my friend taught him baby sign language so that he could communicate before he could speak. And one of the first signs he mastered was the sign for more. More meant more milk, usually, but it also meant again in his brain. So, which wasn't one of his first words, actually. So he would do the sign for more, sing that song again, pretend to smell my stinky feet and faint again, make that sound again with your tongue, do the zoom, 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 we're going to the moon again, all again, 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 more, more, more. And when children do that same thing over and over, they reread the same books, they dump and refill the same bucket, they ask the same questions. Connections are being made in their brains that are critical for learning and development. Research has shown that children learn better from reading a book over and over again than just reading it once or twice. And in one study, researchers presented 3-year-old children with the same new words in 3 stories over the course of a week. So the new words were exactly the same for all children, but half of the children were presented with these words in the same story repeated 3 times, while the other half heard the same words in 3 different stories. And they found that the children who heard the words in the same story learned the words better than those who had heard them, the same words, but presented in 3 different stories. So what strikes me as ironic about this whole thing is if you've ever pulled out a story or a video or an activity that your class has already seen, they sometimes protest fervently. We've already heard this story. We've already seen this. We saw saying this yesterday. And then, of course, once you get into it, they're enraptured once again. But my retort was always something along the lines of, well, sometimes when we see something again, we notice things we didn't notice the first time around. And actually, another study discovered this to be exactly true. When kids reread stories, their conversations about those stories deepened upon subsequent readings, and their responses to questions became more varied and complex. So, when kids ask to watch the same movie they've already seen 100 times or read the same book before bed for the 10th night in a row, it might just be their way of learning the storyline or the vocabulary in those stories. In the same way that I used to listen to the same song over and over to learn the lyrics, or I practice my jump shot to hone my technique, this extra practice might be just what children need to learn those new things. And this phenomenon is not limited to learning facts and new vocabulary. When we hear a song again, we start to notice different subtleties and nuances in it that we may have missed in our initial listen. like drum beats, guitar riffs, piano notes, etc. So like, have you ever watched a movie or heard a story a second time around and thought, oh, I didn't notice that the first time, or, oh, I never noticed that before? So when repeated, we can pick up those subtleties. And the same is true with language. So like, have you ever repeated a word over and over again to the point where it starts to lose its meaning? That's likely due to semantic satiation. And this is when you sort of become numb to the meaning of the word and your ear or brain starts to focus on the sound and other things instead. So take the word pumpkin, for example. Let's say it a few times. Say it a few times to yourself. Pumpkin, 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 pumpkin. Eventually, you may wonder if you're even saying a real word. Sometimes that happens when you say things over and over again. You're like, is that even a real word? Your brain starts instead noticing the rhythm. Pumpkin, 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 pumpkin. Or noticing a slight lip popping sound with the P. Pumpkin, pumpkin, pumpkin. Or it puts a syllable in between the P and the K, like pumpkin, pumpkin, pumpkin. So all kinds of neat things happen when you hear something over and over again. Remember in episode 38, I talked about audio illusions. And there was one audio illusion called speech to song, where a repeated word or short phrase becomes musical. So it's the same principle here. Upon repetition, your attention shifts to different parts of what you're hearing. So for example, with words, your brain picks up the pitch or temporal aspects of the sound instead of focusing solely on the meaning of the word after you've heard it a few times over and over, especially in a row. A couple of months ago, Zoe was playing around with the like programmed tunes on her electric keyboard and stumbled upon the keyboard version of Camptown Races. So it's about a 30-second portion of the song. And after a few rounds of it, I heard giggling, like the good, like authentic from the depths of the soul belly giggles. So I went in and I asked her what was making her giggle. And she said, listen, mommy, it's funny. It goes do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do in the background. Like, whoa. Like, I was so impressed because there was like this, it was so super observant. Her brain was like tickled by the like, I don't know, trill, if that's the right word, of this little snippet of the background music, what it did on like the second time around. The tune. So neat. So because she had heard the song over and over and over and over, her brain was able to hone in on those subtleties within the tune. So neat. And this is perhaps why many critics, including composer Ferdinand Praeger, criticize the repetition in some of the classical pieces of... the repetition of some of the classical pieces of his time around 1882, 1880s, but still critics are doing it today, claiming that repetition in music is childish. But it turns out that it's precisely because of repetition that we identify something as musical in the first place. And in fact, over the past 70 years, repetition in music has steadily increased. Why? Well, this might provide a clue. There was a study about it. So imagine that. Elizabeth Margulis conducted a study with some college students called Aesthetic Response to Repetition in Unfamiliar Music. Nice, concise title. Where she took a piece of music by a composer named Elliot Carter, who's someone that's famous for creating like atonal, non-repetitive compositions. So she took it on its own, and then she created two other pieces by snipping pieces of the original and repeating them. And she had altered it without any consideration for like making it sound nice, the aesthetics of it. She just edited it for repetition. So they listened to three pieces. One was the original, non-repetitive, and two were different versions of the same piece but had repetitions in them. And Margulis's students not only preferred the sound of the repetitive clips, but reported them to be more interesting and more likely to be composed by a human versus the presumed randomly computer-generated original. Like, that's so interesting. So pop music is increasingly repetitive because people like repetition in their music. Think about it. Think about your favorite song. How many times does the chorus repeat in it? How many times have you listened to it? I mean, can you even claim something to be your favorite if you've only heard or seen it or done it once? But why do our brains love the repetition? Well, again, I started by thinking about what I know about the brain and to see what I could come up with. And so I came up with a few hypotheses. Number one, I know that my brain's main objective is to keep me safe. Its primary concern is my safety. And its idea of what is safe is what it knows, what is familiar. So when I listen to something repeatedly, it becomes familiar and, to my brain, safe. Number two, it also tries to keep me safe by keeping me connected to the group. Have you ever been to a concert or cheered for a sports team? The energy in those places is electric, palpable. Everybody's like on the same page. And when my brain is familiar with a tune or in the words of something, it feels like I'm joining in. It feels connected to those whom are part of that thing, like the movie cast or the musical artist or the characters in a series. So it's drawn back to them again and again to satisfy the craving for belonging. Remember, your brain is always seeking a feeling. We do things to feel a feeling and or avoid a feeling. And there, when you get down to the basics, there are really only two or one feeling: love and fear, or love and lack of love. So we're always seeking love, which is our brain sees as belonging, and we're always trying to avoid rejection or fear or lack of love, which is like loneliness, being alone, being rejected. So furthermore, my brain likes to save energy, and it does this by automating things. It's always looking to automate. So remember, repetition of thought combined with emotion caused by that thought becomes belief. So when I repeat things over and over, it becomes automated, like the lyrics to Pour Some Sugar on Me, or all the words to every Friends episode and Harry Potter movie. Repetition is why you can mindlessly sing along to a song on the radio as you're driving. Your brain does not need to focus on the words. I also know that one of the drivers that keeps us going as humans is mastery. So in terms of motivation and what keeps us going when the road gets tough, we're driven by passion, purpose, and mastery. So when we learn something new, we often become determined to perfect our performance or execution of that thing. Repetition of skill, for example, helps us develop mastery of that skill. And lastly, I know that my brain likes to know what is coming. It feels safe in what it knows. So by listening or reading or watching or doing something over and over, it's able to predict what it is coming next, and thus it can chill out. Again, saving energy and releasing positive neurochemicals and hormones. So again, those were my initial thoughts. And in the absence of access to an expert, I skipped right to the investigating my hypothesis with some research. And it turns out I was pretty close. So in terms of familiarity, there is actually something called the mere exposure effect. And this explains that people tend to prefer things that they've been exposed to before. Duh. We like what is familiar. So think about like your kids' eating habits, their favorite bedtime story, your route to work, etc. Have you ever heard a song or like a new version of a song that you didn't like at first, but the more you heard it, you found yourself singing along and then downloading the song, listening to it over and over, memorizing the words, and you think like, oh, it's growing on me. And I know I keep mentioning songs, but this is true for all kinds of things, situations, experiences, scents, food, places, movie remakes, etc. Familiarity makes us feel safe and secure and less alone, be prepared for what's coming next. So knowing what comes next is empowering to our brain. And that's precisely what repetition in music does. So it connects one bit of music to the next bit. And when you hear the first bit, your brain's already imagining and anticipating what's coming next. Manamana. You couldn't resist, could you? You did it. When people hear a segment of music repeated, they are more likely to sing, move, or tap along with it. Repetition invites us in. It gives us that sense of belonging that we're looking for. And yes, repetition helps us learn and master skills like jump shots. In order to learn something new, we need to first create and then strengthen pathways in your brain. So that requires repetition. So first time you do something, it's like walking through a dense forest, right? You got to push your way through the trees, move the stuff out of the way. But the more you do that thing, you start creating this pathway. The thing gets easier. Your jump shots become more automatic. You hold your arm in the correct position more consistently. You don't have to think about your foot placement anymore or your follow through. Your shot gets more accurate. Your brain rewards you with dopamine and other feel good chemicals, which makes you want to do that thing again, repeat that same behavior to get more dopamine. And before you know it, you've created a clear, smooth, wide, easy path through that forest. So that's neuroplasticity, the ability to form and strengthen neural pathways in your brain. Repetition makes something memorable and reinforces the message. So remember, our reticular activating system filters through millions of bits of information coming to us all at once and lets in that which aligns with what we already believe. So when we are exposed to something that aligns with our belief, at least to some degree, our brain accepts it. And when we see that thing reinforced and repeated, it can grab a hold of our brain in a way that we often can't quite control. And that can work in our favor when the things that we're seeing reinforce helpful beliefs that move us towards the things we want. And the flip side is if it clicks on to something quote unquote negative, then it can go the other way. But one harmless example is like an earworm. Have you ever heard of an earworm before? If you've ever been like innocently waiting in line at the grocery store when a song pops into your head and assaults your brain and won't come out, not the whole song, but a fragment of that plays and replays until you find yourself unloading your produce to the rhythm of the music, you've been attacked by an earworm. And here are some fun facts about earworms. Over 90% of people are plagued by earworms at least once a week. About a quarter of people experience them several times a day, and they tend to burrow in when we're doing tasks that don't require much attention. Generally speaking, our brains don't like or don't spend much time in like neutral, quiet, non-thought mode. Most of the time, whether we're conscious about it or not, our brains are running automated programming all the live long day, replaying what happened yesterday or last week, and or worrying about planning or anticipating what's coming up this afternoon or next week or sometime in the future. So when things quieten down between our ears, our brain figuratively twiddles its thumbs by unleashing camp down races or the Wiggles or Let It Go from Frozen, but hopefully something upbeat at least, like Best Day of My Life by American Authors or Bob Marley's Three Little Birds or something. And scientists don't know exactly why this happens. Songs become earworms, usually when we've listened to them recently and repeatedly. And that has been made more convenient by our modern devices. No need to rewind tapes anymore or wait for our favorite song to play on the radio. We can, hey Siri, our favorite catchy tune into earworms in a jiffy. But while these recent technological advances have facilitated the repetition of our favorite tunes, it seems earworms have been around for centuries. In 1876, Mark Twain wrote A Literary Nightmare about an entire town taken over by a rhyming jingle. It's funny to think of like Shakespeare or Napoleon or Cleopatra wandering around town with like some song stuck in their head. Another interesting thing about repetition, again in music, is that kind of like a habit, like tying your shoe, for example, it's automatic until you get to a certain point. So when you're tying your shoe, you just kind of you zone out and go on autopilot until the moment that you tighten the bow. Likewise, in music, our brains kind of feel the need to get to a certain point where the repetition stops before we cut ourselves off and regain consciousness again, in a sense. In other words, we play through to a natural stopping point. So under my umbrella, like we just can't leave it hanging there. Could you? So interesting. But there's also a more like, I don't know, sinister or at least conscious and manipulative intentional use of repetition. And that is its use in like political propaganda, but also even just like in advertising. There's big money and effort intentionally, carefully choosing language, imagery, and messages that are repeated by people who want you to believe what they're saying, whether it's to sell you something like a product or service or an idea or an agenda. Repetition causes the subconscious mind to begin its work. Remember, repetition of thought plus feeling equals a belief. And Hitler leveraged repetition to build up the Nazi movement. He mobilized repetition of propaganda, used the power of suggestion, interestingly, by saying himself that, quote, power of suggestion in the wrong hands can be harmful, quote. And he repeated pictures, slogans, marching songs, mantras through a bombardment of like billboards, press signs, radio, etc. And people bought into it. Some consciously and many, many, many unconsciously or subconsciously, which is my point. I'm not saying that like all repeated messages shared by powerful people or big corporations are bad. No, obviously. I'm just saying that you want to choose the ones that you accept because it is always your choice. Be conscious of what you're allowing in. Examine and challenge the things that you see and hear and ask yourself if they are things that you want to believe and allow in or not. And in fact, you want to question more the things that you hear over and over again and put them through even more rigorous screening. Because if left unexamined, and that's how we have most of the beliefs we have now that we aren't even aware are beliefs, we think that they're truths, these can become your limiting beliefs and hold you back from everything you want and can have in life when you exorcise those beliefs from your being. So in the years of the Depression, the repeated messages included like times are hard, business is poor, banks are failing, etc. It kind of became like this national chant. And people go down under constant hammering. Fear starts to rule the roost. And there were stories of bank failures repeated everywhere. I mean, it was in your face, reinforcing this concept of devastation and loss. And when those thoughts are internalized and your brain starts to believe them, because it's hurt them so much, then you start acting accordingly. People think hard times and hard times follow. And it's those who realize that it's with their own thoughts that they can create hard times or prosperity who become impervious to fluctuations in the economy and come out on top every time. Dr. Walter Dill Scott says, success or failure in business is caused more by mental attitude than by mental capacities. And we know the Henry Ford quote, whether you think you can or you can't, you're right. Our brains are so powerful, and what we tell ourselves over and over is of the utmost importance and has the greatest impact on the outcome of our lives. Like, it's not the good luck charm, the rabbit's foot or the four-leaf clover or the old horseshoe or the amulets or the trinkets that hold the power. It's our belief that they hold the power, because we've heard or seen it over and over again, that breathes the power into them. So think about the things that you've heard repeatedly and start questioning them. Okay, so that I got off on a bit of a tangent there. Let's circle back. What should you do about your kids' repetitive behaviors in a way that honors their interest and learning and doesn't drive you crazy? So here are some tips. As you cycle through books, keep some familiar favorites around and readily available. Try listening to different versions of a familiar song. And when they ask for like the same snack 15 times in a row, try tweaking it like just a tiny bit at a time. Like cut it into different shapes, add something to it, change up the familiar little by little. And look for like sequels of books by the same author. So kids build stronger connections. And they build connections when they have something familiar to grasp onto, like the characters or the style of writing. You can offer open-ended materials that support repeated patterns of behavior. And after you've read a book for the umpteenth time, cover up some of the words and let your kids fill in the blanks or change up the ending. Just play with it. Have fun. Try something a little bit new while still holding on to the things that drew them in the first place. With Zoe, we listen to different episodes of the same favorite podcast. And like I said, sometimes when you hear it the first time, you think you don't like it, but then after some repetition, it becomes a favorite. And that's what happens here too. So as I mentioned at the beginning of the episode, this episode is dedicated to Matt Coleman and his son Quinn for providing me with the focus question for the episode. But I also wanted to give a special shout out to Claire Gillespie in the UK. Claire sent me a very timely and encouraging text over the weekend congratulating me on my 50th episode, which was last week. Claire said, "Congratulations on your 50th podcast. I listen in every week and love them. The one about my worth, value, and what we deserve did in fact blow my mind. You always explain things so clearly. Keep going." And I thanked Claire because my brain started presenting me when I wasn't able to record this episode last week like I had hoped. My brain started presenting me with thoughts like, nobody listens anyway. Probably nobody would even care if I never did another episode in my life. And then in popped this message. So thank you, Claire. It means a lot to me, more than you know, and I really appreciate it. And to everyone else out there who is listening and does look forward to these episodes, thank you as well. I really mean it when I say that it really does make a difference to me, and I'm so grateful for you, and I really appreciate your time and listenership. Thank you. You've been listening to the Teaching Little Brains podcast with Sarah Nicaragua. Until next week, manamana. Bye for now.